Lupus LA would like to thank our generous sponsors for their support of the Your Story, Our Fight podcast. Emerge Business Solutions serves as a personal and professional CFO for clients across a wide spectrum of industries. They handle financial affairs with integrity and transparency. Gemini Beauty believes in beauty for a cause, and in their case, the cause is lupus. The team at Gemini is changing the skincare game for good. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Lupus LA podcast, Your Story, Our Fight. I'm your host, Adam Selkowitz, and at the top of the show, I always thank our sponsors for allowing us to do this important work. Today, I am speaking to a mother-daughter combo here. Margie and Eve McCausland are my guests today, and Eve was diagnosed at age 13, and so you guys are real, and recently. So we're going to talk a lot about how this diagnosis came to be and how it affects your family. And I'm excited to have you guys here. You're very similar to my story. I was diagnosed at 16, and my mom played a really, really important role in my early treatment and diagnosis and things like that. So I know our story shares a lot of similarities. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us, Adam. It's great to be here.
Of course. So Eve, tell me a little bit about your life pre-diagnosis. Tell me kind of what led up to when you first started having your symptoms.
Pre-diagnosis, it was COVID. So like, well, before that, I was always going to the beach because we live in Manhattan Beach. So I was like always at the beach, always in the sun. I'm a huge volleyball player. So like throwing myself across the court and stuff like that. And I was just, I did everything. Like I was very happy. Everybody describes me as like a very outgoing and energetic person. And that definitely changed when I got diagnosed.
So tell me, so you're in the middle of COVID during your diagnosis, which that's a whole other area I would like to get into also. But so tell me kind of what were the initial symptoms and when did you sort of say, wait, this is something's wrong here?
Yeah. So like I said, I'm a volleyball player. So I was hoping to be tall. So I thought when I got my joint pain and arthritis, I just was excited because I thought it was growing pains. And then it got so bad where I couldn't walk down my stairs. And I was taking 6 Advils a day. And I was just like, I talked to my mom about it. We were like, this isn't normal. Because my siblings are all very tall and they went through growing pains, but it wasn't like to the extent where you couldn't get out of your bed. And you were just like basically in your bed all day because I couldn't do anything else.
So Margie, tell me how that sort of happened in your house. Cause I know having 2 little kids, you know, you kind of have to ignore the first couple things they say when they're telling you they don't feel well.
Kids can be a little dramatic. And so she said her knees were bothering her and it was a kind of a blessing in that there's the one thing she could do during the COVID time was they still were doing club volleyball. And so she was doing a lot of volleyball and I thought, and then it was December. And so we had a week break and I'm like, let's just, you know, during this week, let's figure it out and see if the pain goes away. And then she started back again and it didn't go away. And so then again, I'm like, oh, it's just growing pains. Let's do a week of anti-inflammatory and see if that helps. And it didn't help. So I called our pediatrician. And I said, you know, Eve's been having this horrible joint pain. I think we need to come in. And she, of course, brought us in and we told her exactly what we'd been doing. And she immediately said, we need to get blood work. And we took a week to get the blood work back. And sure enough, the ANA was high. So she said, we think it just could be juvenile arthritis, but I need you to go see a rheumatologist. And then that at Children's Hospital, and they had sent our file, well, you know, getting the files sent and me figuring out how to navigate Children's Hospital LA, things weren't lining up and faxes weren't sent. And there was a portal I was supposed to go to. And it was just a learning curve that I didn't expect. So long story short, it took until early February. So it was about 5 weeks to get into a rheumatologist. And that was just a blessing of a cancellation. And they called and said, can you get to Long Beach Children's tomorrow. And so we went and they did blood work and, you know, within 2 days we got a response, you need to come in. And it was the double-stranded DNA that was up like 5,500. And they're like, you have the markers for lupus, or you have lupus.
Mm-hmm. So, right. Well, I will say this, your pediatrician should be
applauded. She
nailed it. That your diagnosis, even though obviously the time between the ANA and seeing a rheumatologist took a little bit, it's record. That's a record time that I've heard in a long time. And I applaud your pediatrician. And, you know, we're really focused on getting the word out to as many pediatricians and doctors, you know, primary care doctors, to look for lupus and to do that ANA test. It's such a simple test. Yeah.
It's baffling to me why that isn't part of just a normal protocol of a blood workup, you know, with something like this. But it seems like it, I mean,
the problem is there's a lot of people out there with no symptoms that have a positive ANA, which sometimes it means nothing. So when you couple it with the symptoms and the other blood tests, but it is a starting point, and it does, if that ANA is positive, you know, to start looking for a lot of the other markers. So, you know, your pediatrician did exactly the right thing. And so you get hit with this diagnosis. And Eve, what goes through your mind? Had you ever heard about lupus before?
No. And it's honestly surprising because my cousin had it and I just never knew that she had it. And I was honestly like devastated because I had to change like my entire diet, my entire lifestyle. Like I loved volleyball and I couldn't play it anymore. And my friends were honestly really nice and like helpful with it because we all went like sugar-free together and gluten-free together so that it wasn't like less inflammatory through foods.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
She's very lucky. How many friends did that?
Three.
Yeah. That's sugar-free and gluten-free.
That would be a big ask.
I was going to say, as long as they initially did it, that's nice. Yeah.
They have been very supportive and very inclusive of her. And when she can go, she goes. Yeah, the first 6 months are rough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
With the diagnosis.
And tell me about sort of how the family overall coped with the diagnosis in those first few months.
Well, I remember coming home and telling my sister, and I didn't know how to tell her. So I just like walked in a room and I said, I have lupus. And she was just like, I know. And I was like, okay. And then that was it. And then my brothers were in college. So we would text, but we wouldn't really FaceTime that much unless it was with my parents. And they called me, and that's when I knew. I was like, okay, like they heard. And I would just tell them what it is and like what's happening. And everybody was really supportive. My parents, my brothers, my sister, everybody kind of just understood that it was a really big deal.
After your initial lifestyle change and presumably treatment from CHLA, how long did it take you to start feeling better? And was there any kind of, did it get worse before it got better, or you were able to start managing it very quickly?
I think it did get worse for a bit right when I saw the rheumatologist for the first time. Because I remember like I would shiver out of pain. But then the second that started going up, it like cranked up. Like I got so much better. And my joints got a lot better really quickly. But it was just more of making sure that like I wasn't getting super fatigued and I wasn't doing too much. And I was still like pacing myself and getting back into my groove.
And Margie, how did you notice the transition into feeling better? And was the low point sort of that initial diagnosis? And then from there, we've been sort of making progress now. Okay. So I don't think
the diagnosis was a low point. The low point was the steroids, the symptoms or the results of the steroids and the hair loss was pretty traumatic. The hair loss on the head, but then the hair on the body that no one kind of prepares you for. And then just not as much, her sleeping got better. She just had more energy, but like, I would say, I mean, she slept after the diagnosis for a couple of weeks. I remember her sleeping a ton or just not having much, energy. And then it was probably 2 to 3 months, 2 months probably. Cause then she did get back to volleyball in late spring. But it was weird because it was COVID. So they weren't in school for a part of it. She was wearing, and then when they were in school, she had to wear a mask, which, you know, covered up some of the, consequences of the drugs.
The side effects. Yeah.
Side effects. Yeah. Thank you. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah. So during COVID, you get diagnosed with an autoimmune illness. Did you have COVID prior to this diagnosis?
No, I got COVID this year for the first time.
Got it. Cause actually one of the things the rheumatologists are noticing is that a lot of people are getting diagnosed with autoimmune diseases post COVID or around COVID. So it's very interesting. Obviously their immune system interactions. So that's a very interesting.
In the initial testing, they had to rule out COVID. I remember that was one of the first things they also did was we just had to rule out that this wasn't related to COVID.
Mm-hmm. So getting diagnosed with an autoimmune disease where you're all of a sudden, you were a normal kid and now you're an immune compromised kid. How did that affect you during sort of the heavier parts of COVID? Were you more isolated? Were you more cautious? That had to be also an adjustment for you.
I feel like I was kind of already isolated, but I had like just a pod of people that I would see regularly. And to be honest, we definitely could have been a lot more cautious. I feel like I was definitely wearing a mask. I was doing, like, I think I wore the mask the longest when I was going back to volleyball practices, because that is just like everybody's touching the same ball. So that's pretty spread. But I feel like I got diagnosed more on the back end when COVID was kind of getting better, I think. So mm-hmm. I feel like we definitely could have been more cautious, but it wasn't too bad.
We all could have been more cautious. I have been immune compromised since I was 16, and I definitely, my friends will tell you I was very cautious, but I know in my heart I could have been more cautious. But I think we all did the best we could. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about how you've really decided to share your story and how important that is. So we'll be right back after these messages. Lupus LA would like to thank you, our supporters, for your continued contribution to our cause. We want to wish you a very happy holiday season, and we'd also like to encourage you to consider donating to our year-end campaign. Go to lupusla.org and donate to support lupus patients in need with emergency grants, one-to-one patient support, and more. We are back on the Lupus LA podcast, Your Story, Our Fight, talking to Eve and Margie McCausland. And before the break, we got most of your story. Now, how you transitioned your story into being an advocate for lupus, I think, I'm really proud of you because you just got a diagnosis so soon, you know, so recently. And to be able to decide to share that, I think, is it's really powerful. So I know you changed schools at one point. So tell me kind of the timeline between when you changed schools and why that was an important part of your lupus story.
So I switched schools, like going into high school, a year and a half after my diagnosis. And I think I just didn't want to be seen as like, not like the lupus girl, but like, I just didn't really want people to know at my elementary school, but I think I matured a lot from lupus. So going into high school at like an all girls school where I kind of like, it is such a tight knit like community when it's just all girls. So I kind of felt more comfortable talking about it. And also I realized that like there are so many people going through it all over the world. And I always wanted to hear other people's like point of views of their diagnosis when I was first going through it. So to be that person for someone else would be really nice.
So when you first got diagnosed, you kept it to a very small group of friends. And so tell me, when you're in eighth grade and you're not telling people, how did that affect you health-wise?
I don't really think it took, I just think I wasn't like scared to tell people, but I think it was just such, I don't really know. It was like, it didn't really affect me that much because I was like comfortable with just my best friends knowing. But I will say when I got appendicitis in eighth grade, my dad, who's my eighth grade math teacher, told his class. And I don't think he meant to, but I was realizing that there was like no effect of it, like nothing changed. That did help with like my comfortability of like telling more of my friends. And I ended up, I think probably most of my class knew by the end of eighth grade.
Got it. So your dad accidentally outed you in eighth grade, which I'm sure was not a fun night around the dinner table. But you had a very appendicitis on top of all this, during that year. So
of course I questioned, does appendicitis happen to people with lupus, but.
Right. Yes. No, it does not. No, no. But I think, it's an interesting, you know, you're piling on all of this medical stress at one time, because I'm sure your first symptoms of the appendicitis, you thought something related to lupus, right?
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't home for different. The weekend, so I thought she'd just eaten a bunch of not so healthy food.
Ah, got it.
But then she, again, the fabulous pediatrician was, we did a Zoom meeting really quick. And, you know, she just said, I think you need to go to the emergency room, Eve.
She's pediatrician of the year in my book. I'm telling
she
you.
Is. She's a, she
you
was
should
amazing.
Say her name if you want to, because she needs more.
Well, it was Letty Burgett, Dr. Letty Burgett. And unfortunately, she's no longer with us. She passed away. She was amazing.
That's a real shame, because those are the kind of pediatricians that are so hard to find. Doctors in general that are so hard to find. So, well, I'm sure she's very proud that you're doing this. And so you get to high school. How do you is it just sort of part of your, you know, hi, I'm Eve and I have lupus, or did you just kind of let it naturally fall out?
I think I let it more naturally come out. Like, I told my best friend in high school, and then like as I kind of met more girls and became closer with more girls, like when it would kind of come up, or like if I had a doctor's appointment at my rheumatologist, I would just be like, oh yeah, I'm going to see my rheumatologist. And then people would be like, what's a rheumatologist? And then I'd be like, oh, I have lupus. And then it would kind of just go out like that.
And tell me, what was the general reaction? How many of the people that you told either knew what it was or knew somebody with lupus, or what surprised you?
Most people will just say, that's the Selena Gomez disease, right? And I would say, yeah. Because I guess a lot of people just like represent it with Selena Gomez. And I would just say like, oh, it's an autoimmune disease. And then that's basically it. And then people, a lot of my friends Google it on their own, and then they're like, oh my gosh, like I didn't know how serious it was. And then that's it.
And Margie, how did it make you feel when she decided to be so open about her lupus?
I'm okay with it. It's her, you know, it's her journey, and it's her, she's a very well-spoken, outgoing girl. And I do believe not struggled, but I thankfully have my sister, her daughter has it. And I was able to, you know, talk to her about it when we were going through stuff, and I could call and say, oh my gosh, has your daughter ever had this? Has, you know, my niece ever had that? And, you know, so far the two cases are quite different. And, but I think it's amazing. And again, if she can help anybody else, or if we can help anybody else get through this, you know, one, my sister's brother-in-law who's a doctor said, you know, lupus is just an inconvenience. It's just kind of a nuisance. And I remember telling, you know, calling her, I'm like, okay, this isn't a nuisance. This is more than just a nuisance. But you get to now where you live with it, and it's, you know, been a few years, that it's definitely top of mind. We think about it. But we try to control and do everything possible to, you know, just make sure she's feeling better and she's getting rest and keep stress low. And we have, you know, food is medicine in our house. We try to eat pretty clean and healthy, and it's not to say there is still sugar in the house, but we just try to, you know, be very mindful of not eating unhealthy. And, you know, exercise is big, and, you know, just, she's pretty much a normal, you know, almost 16-year-old learning how to drive. Mm-hmm.
So. Oh, yes, the fun part. Yeah. It's frustrating when you hear somebody say that what you're going through is an inconvenience. Because yes, it's an inconvenience, but that's the easy part, the inconvenience, you know? Right. I think part of the stress of lupus is sort of that anticipation, you know, what's my body doing now that's going to result in a week or 2 weeks, or what do I have to be on the lookout for? And I think the learning curve that most lupus patients go through is, how do you really tune into your body and know, okay, this is, you know, normal aches and pains, or am I having a flare? Or, you know, Eve, have you felt like you're more in tune as you keep going through the process of figuring that out?
100%. Like, there are days, especially during volleyball season, when I won't get home until like 10 p.m. and I'll wake up the next morning and I'm just like, it is such an extreme like fatigue that I just can't, like, I physically can't go to school. Like, it's not like I'm just tired, like I just had a late night. It's, I can't like pull off going to bed late at night and then wake up the next morning early and go take a test. Like my friends can, where they'll stay up studying until 12 p.m. and then wake up and be fine the next morning. I physically can't do it. Like, it just doesn't work.
So you really have to manage your schedule better and be on top of all of that, because you can't, you know, slip into that by accident.
Yeah.
I've noticed too, this fall we've made Sundays are really definitely rest days. You know?
Yeah. Me too. Calendar. That's football day. I'm on the couch. Yeah, no. It's, you know, exactly. Yeah.
My husband's exactly. Really happy. We're home.
Sundays. Right. Exactly. All right. So tell me, I want to know your plan for advocacy. What are your goals in sort of talking about lupus, and how do you think lupus is going to be a part of that next few years for you as you go through high school?
I would love to be like a voice for girls my age with lupus, and also just like being able to raise money for it as well. Like, I know at my school we do Buck a Stuff days, which are like, you get free dress and you pay a dollar. And a lot of girls do it for a cause that they love, and then they'll set it up and raise a bunch of money for the organization. And I really want to do that for Lupus LA or lupus in general. And I just want to be like an advocate for people with lupus and a voice, and share my story so other people don't feel like they're alone in a sense, and also know what to look for when they do have it.
Well, this is a great start, and Lupus LA will absolutely help you with all of that. And I really admire you for doing that. So tell me, what are you playing volleyball in high school, or are we yes. not? Are we back on the court? Okay. Or in the sand? Which is it? Is it both?
Both.
Well, that's got to be really a big milestone for you, right? To be back mm-hmm. doing all of that, the things you love.
Yeah, for sure. And I will say, when I came out of lupus, like that, when I couldn't play volleyball, I definitely lost my love for the sport a little bit, because it was still painful to play. And I definitely lost a lot of my skill. But going back in like a school setting where it's not club and it's not year round, it's just a section of time and it's a lot more fun. Like, I've just totally found my love for the sport again, and I love playing it every day.
Excellent. Well, I really appreciate you both sharing your story, and I know it's going to make a big impact, especially on girls your age, Eve, because this is a really tough time to get diagnosed in your life. And we're here to support you in all of that. And Margie, thank you for helping Eve to share her story and your story, because it's obviously really important.
Well, thank you, Adam, for joining us. And Lupus LA, thank them for everything they're doing too. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. On behalf of the entire team at Lupus LA, we thank you for joining the Your Story, Our Fight podcast. Please tune in, spread the word, and come back for more inspiring lupus stories. I'm your host, Adam Selkowitz, wishing you good health, and to always remember, your story is our fight.